It's the 29th of October, 2 days before Halloween. Although sometimes with the state of current affairs, as I said last week, Halloween seems to be a daily occurrence. We'll talk about that and some of the events that have occurred over the last several days and things we may think will be occurring over the next several days, weeks, years with our resident presidentologist, historical scholar, as Scott Spears likes to say, author, blogger, historian. I just say we're going to have a Ronversation with the presidentologist, Dr. Ron Fineman, on the line with me. Let's see if the intern has properly plugged A into B, duct taped where necessary, and gone through the proper channels. Ron, are you there?
Yes, I'm here, and I thank you very much again for inviting me. And I love that Ronversation idea. It's great.
Well, I am a bit of a wordsmith, and, you know, as I put on Facebook, we always leave time for laughter because I honestly believe it is the best medicine. Even with the tragic events that have occurred in the last week, you need to leave time to laugh. Go ahead and take a deep breath and look at reality and look at ways to better the world. And right now, it seems kind of hard to do, but we always seem to pull through. Close to home, Ron, in Pittsburgh, a beautiful city that I and my fellow station personnel had the pleasure of going to back in March for a very happy event, the launch of the Mr. Rogers stamp. Of course, I managed to take in the nightlife and go to karaoke and a few other things like I try to do in a new city, but the Mr. Rogers stamp was a wonderful event. Unfortunately, the event in Pittsburgh last week was a very unfortunate event. What are your thoughts, Ron, and why are we seeing so much of this kind of thing going on right now?
Well, we have white supremacists are getting more influence because of Donald Trump's whole way of dealing with issues with immigrants and with racial minorities and women. And I blame a lot of it for him, not directly, of course, but indirectly on him. And this was the worst anti-Semitic incident as far as loss of life in American history, with 11 people dead and 6 wounded. And it reminds people of Kristallnacht, you know, when the Germans, the Nazis in 1938 on November 9th, went around destroying a lot of Jewish properties. And I'm concerned about the possibility of copycats, that we may have another incident or more than one incident like this. It's very, very scary.
I mean, not really much to say. You know, as I say, we're different as Americans. Our diversity makes us great, but we're on the same team. And it really seems like in the last several months, we're on very different teams. And that's not a good thing. And as we said, Donald Trump certainly is not the mastermind, but it's the opinion of some people that his presence is causing more of these unfortunate acts to become commonplace and adding divisiveness. And it's a slippery slope. And we kind of wonder, I mean, how much is the influence of Donald Trump and, again, the differences between the Obama administration and the current Trump administration? Can we solve this, Ron? Or does it seem like every few weeks we'll be talking about a similar incident? Can we shake hands and understand that we're different, but can we still try to get along? Is that possible, or have we diverged so much that those days may be behind us?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with lack of education or bad parenting when children are growing up, because a lot of these white supremacists are young men, sometimes women, but usually men, and I think a lot of it is the environment they grow up in, and it's disgraceful, but that's why education and better parenting are the crucial issues. But unfortunately, I think there's a lot of hate out there because of the changing of society, because as people would say, and it's true, that the white majority is going to become less than a majority by 2040, 2045. We're having the so-called browning of America, and a lot of people don't like it. But it's unavoidable at this point, and it really should not matter what skin color or religion or ethnicity one is. But unfortunately, we have a lot of hate out there, and some of it's being promoted by, I'm sorry to say, Christian evangelicals as well. You know, there are religious leaders who are promoting this as well. So we have political and religious extremists who are feeding the fuel for this, and young people are being influenced by it because of bad parenting and lack of education.
So, unfortunately, these types of events may be becoming more commonplace. And Is it going hand in hand with other things happening? Again, that whites are becoming less of a majority, and as we said, in a generation's time, may actually become the minority. And we're obviously seeing people of very different political and social beliefs. Again, the Trump administration certainly is a very unique one, and we're by no means saying that Donald Trump is behind this, but it seems like he's stirred things up. And is he a victim of circumstance? Do we really know? It's just so unfortunate. And when something takes place as close to Marion as this did in Pittsburgh, you really do get the chills. But it doesn't matter where it occurs. I just wish we could all get along, but obviously that's living a pipe dream. And let's hope that
Mr. Rogers' neighborhood, as you'd say, and have this happen, is a little more shocking than almost anything else, because it's like Mr. Rogers would certainly be very upset and angry about this, because he would not justify it at all. And it's a shame that this has happened so close to where he lived.
Yeah, Mr. Rogers, I can imagine how upset he would be. And
yes,
it's very frustrating. And I wish I could say something. I wish words would be enough to offer sympathy to the families and friends and everybody else. We're all Americans. We're all on the same team, but words aren't. And I'm just deeply saddened. And let's hope that next time we talk, we can open the show with something happy. And, you know, again, laugh a bit like we like to. And other notes.
I want to point out that Trump did bring up about the fact that after 9/11, that everything opened up the next day, so therefore there's no reason he should cancel his speech in Illinois. But actually, that's not true. It was closed for 6 days, the stock market and everything after September 11th. He's lying again. He doesn't know his facts, or he's lying, or both. And yet he's making now like, oh, this just happened hours ago, but oh well, I'm still going to go and make a speech and attack the opposition. It's just so inappropriate. You know, but he does so many inappropriate things. That's the whole thing about him.
Right. Well, I remember baseball, because it was toward the end of the baseball season, and they canceled the games for several days. And it was almost a generation ago, but be assured, I remember it. Anybody who was at least 10, 15 years old at the time, and, well, I was a lot more than that at the time, will remember it. Remember exactly what you were doing, where you were living, what the weather was like. And I'm not really quite sure, because Donald Trump, he was in his late 50s when that occurred. So who knows? In other news.
And he claimed a lot of his friends were killed in 9/11, and they've checked. He knew nobody that died in 9/11. He's another one of his exaggerations. He has to put himself into the middle of the story all the time.
Yesterday, in Brazil, Jair Bolsonaro, far-right populist, was elected president of Brazil. And we were talking on the air, Ron, before we turned the microphones on and started broadcasting over the great Marion and worldwide via the internet airwaves, that Bolsonaro is a lot like Trump, a divisive populist, someone very far to the right. And what kind of an influence is that going to have? Brazil is a pretty large country and not too far from the United States. How is that going to influence world politics and even policies here in the States?
Well, Brazil is the largest nation in the hemisphere, except for the United States. And if it wasn't for Alaska, it actually would be larger in land, and it's one of the most heavily populated countries, and really the leader in Latin America. And, you know, they're now planning, according to this, to exile or kill off people who disagree with him, which is much more extreme than Trump, of course, much more. And also talking about getting out of the Paris Climate Accord. So, I mean, there's so many countries that are becoming authoritarian right now, and it's just really a scary situation, and it leads ultimately to widespread bloodshed, mass murder, and war. And I'm afraid Brazil is going to become a real center of trouble. But, of course, Trump will love him because he's on the right side, while he's, of course, attacking Venezuela. And I agree, Venezuela is a terrible country, but as far as their situation. But I don't think Brazil should be applauded for what it's just done either. But this is a double standard, of course, that he has, unlike Jimmy Carter, who was always promoting human rights in all countries.
Let's go to a state to our south and southwest, to the beautiful small city of Owensboro, Kentucky. Something not quite so beautiful occurred. A father dressed his 5-year-old son as Adolf Hitler for a Halloween event while posing as a Nazi soldier, saying his intent was to portray historical figures. And that's made a lot of news and kind of generated a lot of controversy. What's your thought on that, Ron? What did you think when you heard about that happening, again, in nearby Kentucky?
Well, I was very upset by it because I think a father to do something like that is teaching the wrong lesson to his son. Now, maybe his son, but he probably is learning about what Hitler's all about. And it just makes you wonder about the common sense or the lack of brains that this parent has. And I think that's outrageous. And the thing is, he was criticizing people for criticizing him, calling them liberals, but it's not a question of being a liberal. Any decent person would realize you don't, you know, dress up your kid to be, to be Hitler. You know, you could do a lot of different things that are, you know, evil forces, but you don't do that about someone who did such horrible damage and mass murder to the extreme in the history of the world. And it just amazes me how so many parents are ignorant or just don't get it, that everything they do affects their children's psyche.
So we're saying that it's okay to dress up or dress your kid up as a historical figure, but use better judgment. Hitler is not a good choice. Now, we're not saying that we condone this by any means, and I feel as you do, Ron, but there are obviously good and bad historical figures and figures that are good and bad. Everybody is part good and part bad. But Hitler is so far to that extreme, it is completely inappropriate to dress your kid up as Hitler. That is way too far. However, we're not saying that it's uncool to dress up or dress your kid up as a historical figure. He wasn't considered to be good. It just use a little bit of judgment. Hitler obviously goes well over that line. And one thing to keep in mind is, as I like to use practical, if not jovial or funny ways of learning about things, dressing up as a historical figure is a good way to learn about that person. Again, it doesn't have to be someone who is well loved. It could be someone who's controversial. But Hitler,
of course,
Hitler obviously is a bad choice. Let me just pretend, Ron, that you were the father. And, you know, again, as someone interested in history, you certainly have an influence on your kids. I mean, as you know, your son David, for example, the influence he's taken from you and what he's accomplished as an environmentalist is just awesome. But if you had a 5-year-old kid or a nephew you're taking care of or a grandson, whatever, and you maybe wanted to dress him up as a historical figure who isn't necessarily thought of as a good figure, whom do you think might be a good choice? Maybe someone who's controversial, where the controversy isn't necessarily all good. Are there any good choices in that kind of a light?
Well, maybe Richard Nixon.
Nixon definitely,
but
especially
he's
in how much
controversial.
Also,
he's not totally evil. He's not on the level of a Hitler. So maybe a Richard Nixon, or maybe maybe a Herbert Hoover for the Great Depression. I'm joking here, but I mean somebody like that who did bad things, but are not necessarily bad people. Of course, I could also say, since you brought up the environmentalist issue, I think a great choice, looking at it in a positive way, is have someone dress up as Theodore Roosevelt, the greatest environmental president, and also point out that Nixon is the second greatest environmental president. So that's why he does have virtues, Nixon, even though I'm a critic of his. But he looks an awful lot better in retrospect now that we have Donald Trump.
So Hitler, Mussolini, Stalin, those types of people, definitely not good choices, but we can...
And not Kim Jong-un either.
Right, and we can certainly use historical figures who may be controversial. Nixon being a good choice, because Nixon did so many good things. He just made some pretty stupid decisions and probably should have picked better people to hang out with. Of course, a lot of people will dress up as the current president.
Donald Trump also, people will dress up.
Yeah.
That's acceptable. It's certainly not being like a Hitler, my gosh, you know.
So again, I would say, use common sense, draw the line. And in this case, the father did a very bad job of drawing the line. And it just wasn't cool. Not that we don't want to learn about Hitler and learn about how horrible he was and understand that World War II, Nazi Germany, that was an important part of history. And history contains good events and bad events. But dressing up as Hitler for Halloween, that's a different matter. Very uncool, and we'll kind of leave it at that. Not much else I can say, but maybe some good will come out of that. It'll open up people's eyes and understand that Halloween is a fun event, but the fun needs to be taken in an appropriate manner. And five-year-olds are
I wanted to mention, I wonder, what about this kid's mother? I assume he has a wife and a mother that is, unless they're separated, and he brings up the kid. But if I would think a woman would say to her husband, sweetheart, what are you doing? I would think they'd have more sense on something like that.
And best way to say it, I don't know. But being
nothing
a parent,
in the article said that there was a mother, but I assume, well, there was a mother, but whether the mother has an impact in this kid's life. But if it's just the father, oh my God, this is a bad situation. We may have a future white supremacist being created here, if that's the case, you know.
Being a parent of a five-year-old is not an easy job, and I admire anybody who can do it. And I know the father wasn't trying to stir up the pot, but he needs to make better decisions, and maybe this will be a learning experience. Let's hope so.
I hope so, yes.
You quoted an article, Ron, from History News Network, and oftentimes you write articles for History News Network, so one of your colleagues, Walter G. Moss from another nearby state, Eastern Michigan University, wrote about parallels between Joseph Stalin and Donald J. Trump. Now, that's a pretty strong comparison, is that we talked about Stalin earlier, a very disliked person, to say the least. So saying that there are parallels between Trump and Stalin is a pretty strong statement. Do you agree with this article, and do you feel that Trump is as dangerous as Stalin? Or what? When you read this and mulled it over, what was your impression?
Well, this Walter Moss is actually quite a distinguished historian, and I think there's a lot of virtue to what he says, or commonalities between Trump and Stalin, although even he says Stalin is far worse. He's not making them out to be equal, but just saying that there are problems here, and I do think it makes a lot of sense, yes.
A couple of things that the Professor Moss talked about. Both men are extremely suspicious and power-hungry. Well, I would say Trump is definitely power-hungry, and that doesn't have to be bad. The president is the most powerful man in the universe, as far as we know, but needs to be taken in stride, and that's certainly been an issue with Mr. Trump. Both men have relied on fear to increase and solidify support, and that, to me, isn't the way you're supposed to govern. You shouldn't be doing it by fear. There are better ways, and that may just be a byproduct of Trump not having experience in elected office. I mean, who knows? It's hard to figure
out. Yeah,
and
also
out.
The article says both men are colossal liars. I mean, Trump has had over 5,000 lies, and it's unbelievable, in less than 2 years. And his ego was very big, as was Stalin. So, and they see their enemies as somehow a threat to society rather than just as opponents. So there are common bonds between the two. But, of course, thank God, we're not saying Trump is Stalin, but there are dangerous parallels there.
We are speaking with our official WWGH presidentologist, Dr. Ron Fineman, live from a place where it's much warmer than it is here, Boca Raton, Florida, where he hangs his hat. He still teaches part-time. He writes. He blogs. He's a regular contributor on History News Network, having what we call a Ronversation on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the professor. Yesterday, Ron, you were supposed to be on Blog Talk Radio with a couple other commentators discussing the events of the day. Unfortunately, due to technical problems, that show did not take place, but will be postponed until next week.
Next Sunday, yeah, next Sunday at 6.
We do encourage people to listen, blogtalkradio.com.
Sunday show.
You know, I'm a team player. All talk radio stations are on the same side as far as I'm concerned. I won't fault you for turning off this great station and turning on blogtalkradio.com this Sunday, 6 p.m. I guess that'll actually be Eastern Standard Time. That's kind of tricky because that's the day that the clocks fall backwards. So.
No longer Eastern Daylight Time, it'll be Eastern Standard Time. That's right. We changed it on Sunday morning, officially at 2 a.m. next Sunday.
That'll
You're
be
right.
interesting. I wonder if Donald Trump understands daylight savings.
Well, we learned yesterday that he has trouble closing an umbrella as he's getting on Air Force One. It was really hilarious to see that he couldn't close it. He just dropped it on the tarmac. I thought that was very strange, and it was pointed out by New York Magazine. He seems to have trouble with basic things. I think it's a sign, frankly, of some physical and mental deterioration. You know, he is in his 70s, and there's been hints that he may have major problems of cognition, and it's not so much a joke. I think it's just a reality.
Well, he's He's different, isn't he? So anyway, Ron,
as you said earlier,
we do encourage folks to listen to that show. Ron, those two commentators you're on with are very much to the left, more to the left than you are. I know often I joke.
I would say probably so, yes. Wayne Johnson, Gwendolyn Holden Barry, and Jack Jodell, yes. Although I'm still on the left, but I think they are more to the left than I am, yes.
Wayne's interesting. I talk with him a lot on Facebook, and he has an engineering background. We've talked about how oftentimes engineers and scientists are find themselves to the right, or at least kind of moderate right, as I am on some issues, my background being science and math. But Wayne is very much to the left, and even Ron is saying to the left of him. So that'll certainly be a stimulating and lively conversation. What do you think you guys will be talking about? Healthcare, the tragic events.
Well, we're going to be talking about, of course, what happened with the massacre in Pittsburgh. We're going to talk about the bombs that were mailed to the presidents. I mean, it's unbelievable. And, you know, thank God, of course, none of them get directly to these people because they always have a mail system that it goes through. But still, even the thought that someone was doing that. Plus, we're going to talk about the election because I made my projections of what's going to happen with the election. And we were going to discuss it, but we'll discuss it next Sunday instead.
So we do encourage people to listen to that show. It will certainly be lively. And I was hoping to discuss yesterday's show today with Ron, but it didn't occur. So maybe we'll do that next week. Hopefully my clock will be right because, you know, daylight savings time. It's the exact time has changed at least a couple times during my lifetime. But honestly, I'm a night owl. I'm a bit of a vampire, honestly. So to me, I'd prefer to keep daylight savings time as long as possible. Plus, I like the sun not coming up.
I'll tell you,
like
Florida's supposed to have had daylight savings all year round. They passed it in the legislature, and Rick Scott bragged about it, but there had to be a creature by the Congress, and the Congress did not apparently take action. They didn't do much of anything this year, so therefore we are going to have to go back to standard time, although he had wanted to make it all year round daylight savings in Florida.
Interesting anyway, since far western Florida is on central time, and people don't realize that the panhandle goes way to the west. So, kind of interesting.
What's left of the panhandle after Hurricane Michael? Horrible. And not much has been done about it because there's not that much population. I don't see Rick Scott doing much at all. But, you know, according to some polls, he's going to win over Bill Nelson for the Senate seat. I hope that does not happen, however.
Well, we shall find out. Scott has been speaking with candidates regularly. The Ohio election coming up next week. And again, please, folks, get off your you-know-what and vote. Vote early if you wish. Personally, I like to vote on Election Day. I think it's the right thing to do. So I'll be going to my polling place on Election Day to cast my ballot. And so please, folks, vote. There's no excuse not to. And again, if you don't vote, you really don't have any right to complain if somebody gets elected whom you don't like. At least if you do.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, if I lived in Ohio, I'd vote for Richard Cordray for governor, and I would vote for Sherrod Brown for the Senate. That's what I would do, but I can't vote. I voted in Florida, and I voted by mail, so it's already been done. And I voted for Andrew Gillum, and I also voted for Bill Nelson.
And, of course, Richard Cordray, a former five-time retired champion on Jeopardy, so we'll take Richard Cordray, yes. Alex. He actually, I think I told you this, Ron, when he won the money on Jeopardy, he used it to pay his debt from law school, which is kind of cool that he did that.
Wow. Well, that's not a bad reason at all. That shows common sense. Hopefully he can do that with the Ohio economy, right?
Yeah. Common sense is very well needed. And his campaign treasurer is Mary Ellen Withrow, a good friend of the station, frequent guest with Scott in person, and again, still lives in Marion, and of course, signer of many, many dollar bills under the Bill Clinton administration. Did you know that, Ron, that she was the treasurer of Richard Cordray's campaign?
No, that I did not actually know. Thank you for telling me, but I know, of course, she worked under Bill Clinton. So she's a famous Marionite, I guess is the word we would say, for the city.
She's about as famous as she come. There is a Mary Ellen Withrow Museum that she personally gives people tours of. They talked about that recently.
Yeah.
On the air.
And Marion Knight would be the term, I guess, for a person in Marion, right?
I would definitely say she is a treasure in many ways. And a very, very sharp dresser
also.
She
and Warren G. Harding share Marion, Ohio as part of history.
Yeah, very, very sharp dresser. Look at the photo of her from a few days ago when they were at Primrose. She definitely is a stylish person, to say the least. So Dr. Feynman is an author of a popular blog that he's written for, I think, about 10 and a half years, theprogressiveprofessor.com, and take a look at some of the recent articles back yesterday. The most tumultuous, always like that word, of many weeks under the presidency of Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been president for 92 weeks, 1 year, 9 months, and 1 week. And each week has been one of tumult and turmoil, and the situation becoming more dire by the week. One has to believe that justice, equity, fair play will triumph, but we will not know until after November 6th.
I'll tell you, the polls have been driving me crazy. Some polls say the Democrats are going to win big in the House, have a chance at the Senate. I think it's going to be 50-50, as I wrote a few days ago. 50-50 Senate, so it'll still be Republican. But then others say, no, the Republicans are going to lose some seats but still keep control of the House. I tell you, it's going to be a very... It's going to be a very exciting week if one is happy with the results, whichever side you're on, or a very depressing week if you're on the wrong side of the results. It's very emotional. It's hard to just sit on the sidelines and say it doesn't matter. It really does matter.
And here at the station, we will have election coverage all night long Tuesday of next week, so please listen. It'll certainly be an interesting election, and like almost any election, I'm sure there will be a surprise or two. Governor's race is quite close.
I guess Jim Jordan will probably be in the area, won't he, on Tuesday because of the election? Because he could be possibly the future Speaker of the House if the Republicans keep control. So I guess he'll be interviewed by your station, hopefully?
We'll find out, and hopefully he will be nicer than he was last time, and I'll leave it at that.
He probably is going to win, but imagine if he loses, will he be pleasant?
I'm sure he will not be a happy camper. But let's go...
but actually, he's probably still favored by polls. He probably will win.
Let's go about three states to the south to Georgia, where the governor's race, we've talked about a few times, seems like it's widening up a bit. So what do you think is going to happen there in Georgia, Ron, and the governor's race?
According to the latest poll, Stacey Abrams, the African-American female, who's not Jewish, by the way, despite that name, which sounds Jewish, Democratic nominee for governor, seems to be ahead. But, you know, of course, her opponent, Brian Kemp, is the Secretary of State and has been preventing certain votes from being counted. So I don't know what's going to happen there. I think there's interference with voting, which to me is illegal. But it's hard to know what's going to happen. The same with Florida, where Andrew Gillum, supposedly the African-American male candidate for, you know, the Democrats, is ahead, but then there are others saying Ron DeSantis is catching up. And again, we know from polls in the past you can't always rely on them, and they're so you know they're so contradictory. So it's going to be a surprise, however it all works out across the country. I just hope it works out the way I would prefer it to work out. But we have to just wait and see, and wonder if there's foreign collusion by any nation. That could also be a factor. So it's very upsetting time, because we can't feel that we can rely on the results as being accurate, but we're going to have to accept the results.
I would imagine that former President Jimmy Carter, who still lives in Georgia, will be voting for Abrams. I guess that's a pretty safe bet, right?
Oh, of course. Absolutely, yes. He's already spoken up for her a few times, pointing out how she came from nowhere, because, you know, he came out of so-called nowhere and he became governor. And she's in the state legislature, but I don't think anybody ever expected her to be the nominee of the party in the South. To have two potential African-American governors in the South would be revolutionary.
On Saturday, you wrote the facts about Barack Obama's achievements on the economy, corruption, and health care as compared to Donald Trump's record. The minute I saw that headline, I said, well, this will be a doozy. My mom always used that word, doozy. With the midterm elections of 2018 only 10 days away, we are now in the season of lying about Barack Obama's record by Republicans who act as if the 44th president accomplished nothing while in office and was an abject failure. Well, that's a pretty strong statement. What's your reasoning on that, Ron? Is he really just disliked that much by the other side, or can we all kind of try to get along?
Well, by the Republican Party, they won't give him credit for anything. And as I wrote in the article, they act as if the economic revival that's now continuing, and it is, suddenly just started on January 20th, 2017, when it was a revival from the year 10 up to the end time Obama left office, and actually the economic revival was greater than that of FDR ending the Great Depression, which only brought up, was only brought about by entrance into World War II. Well, in Obama's case, the Great Recession was overcome without going into a major war. And I honestly think that if Hillary Clinton had won, the economy would still have been expanding. Maybe not exactly the same. You can never say exactly, but it certainly would not have been a decline. So he's claiming credit, our president, as if everything began only when he got in, and that's preposterous. And the same with corruption. Obama had no real corruption of note, and there's so much corruption under Trump. And also the pre-existing conditions of Obamacare, the Republicans have been trying to get rid of it. 70 times they've voted to end it. They've not been able to end it, but their candidates, including Trump, not that he's a candidate, are all saying they're all for it now for pre-existing conditions to be covered, but their record shows they never have been. So it really is crazy. And meanwhile, as I point out, the C-SPAN poll of historians put Obama 12th of all presidents last year, and the American Political Science Association this spring put him 8th, and they put Trump 44 out of 44. And this included conservative and Republican political scientists. So, I mean, they, at least the experts seem to see him in the top quarter or the top 10, depending on which poll you look at. And these are experts, not partisan people. So, I do think that Obama's achievements in other areas too, but in these areas should be noted.
So, the early tally is that Donald Trump is considered quite possibly the worst president of all time, and he's only barely, almost, not even, halfway into his term. So that isn't really looking too good.
At the time of the APSA poll, it was only a year, so now it's even almost 9 months more. I don't think he's been rising in the second year. I think it's made worse. At least I feel that way.
So not looking too good for the Donald at this point. You wrote, again, we talked about the History News Network, where you are a regular contributor. Recent article discusses our state with the most people, and of course that would be California. In fact, 13% of our United States population lives in California. You wrote, it has a wealth of talented politicians considered likely to pursue a presidential candidacy. And with the Golden State planning its primary on March 3rd of 2020, that's not too far away, less than half a year.
Oh, it's right around the corner. Everybody's going to start announcing within a week or two or so after the midterms. They can't wait. They got to get a head start.
And again,
no break from policy.
We'll properly pronounce her name today, Kamala Harris, which we learned that last week, not Kamala, or it's Kamala Harris, often termed by many observers as the female Barack Obama, due to the fact that she has a mixed race background like Obama, mother from India, father from Jamaica, long record of public service, district attorney of San Francisco, California attorney general, and junior senator from California for the past 2 years, and about Obama's age, 56 at the time of the election, slightly younger. So we're seeing her as
Obama was 47. So she'll be 56 if she was to be elected.
Look at her as a young whippersnapper. So, and we talked about her before after we got over the pronunciation issue, that Kamala Harris is someone to watch out for. And you're saying in this article that as California goes, the whole nation goes, and we need to put California under the microscope because it is important. Another person likely to enter the race is L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti, 49 at the time of the 2020 presidential election. Gosh, he quite a bit younger than I am. That's kind of a scary thought. Interesting ethnic background.
It was hard for me when I first discovered politicians were younger than me as well. Once it starts, it never stops.
Yeah, Jewish, Hispanic, and an Italian last name. That certainly, again, is intriguing. Long history of urban government experience, L.A. City Council since 2001. President of the City Council for 6 of those years, mayor for the first term in 2013, and resoundingly reelected to a second term. Extremely well-educated, bachelor's and master's from one of the top schools in the world, Columbia University in New York City, Rhodes Scholar, and studied for a PhD at the London School of Economics. He was also in the Navy. And you wrote, a rare modern politician who has served in the military. I guess
that's
I kind
true,
of
true. Yes, and right. He's one of my favorites on my own personal list.
I guess kind of brings up a point.
My personal list.
It seems like with Grant and Eisenhower and others, and Carter was in the Navy, I believe. We've had a lot of presidents who were veterans, including ones with high ranks like generals. And I guess we're not really seeing that anymore, are we? I never really talked about that before.
Not very much. No, there's very few people, even on the list that might run, that have any military background. A few, but not very many. You're right.
That has changed, isn't it? Because, we had many presidents who were veterans, a couple generation or a couple generations ago. And
that's correct, yes.
You know anything and everything, being the presidentologist. Since Carter, have any presidents?
I don't know everything, but Truman, Eisenhower, Kennedy, Johnson, Nixon, Ford, and Carter, and even Reagan in the active part of the military, and also the first Bush, all were in the military. So every president from 45 to 93 had served in the military in some form, but now that's not the case. Actually, you could say Bush, too, was sort of like the National Guard, I guess, but you want to call that service, but he wasn't even there much. But Clinton was not, and Obama is not, and most younger people now do not go into the military.
I guess that is kind of interesting, because it seemed like there were many military members as presidents, again, including several who were generals, Eisenhower being the most recent one. But a generation, not including National Guard service from Bush number two, since 93, a generation has passed since we've had a president who's been a veteran, which I guess never really considered that before. But that is certainly a point to ponder. Something else I'd always been intrigued about, I once asked my mother, do you have to be a lawyer to be president? Well, you don't, but many presidents have been lawyers. And that,
yes.
I guess, Ron, that hasn't really changed too much. Obama's a lawyer. Nixon, Clinton were lawyers. Of course, Trump isn't. But so it's kind of gone back and forth. It seems like in modern times, most presidents have been lawyers, but not all of them. So certainly that's a line of work that will prepare you in some ways for politics, but isn't a requirement. So I remember asking my mom about that.
Well, also, I want to point out that Truman's the only president since the 20th century began who never went to college, never graduated college. Every other person has. Now, Scott Walker from Wisconsin went to college but did not finish. He was one semester short and he never finished. But that is rare to have a non-college graduate even competing. But Scott Walker, when he ran in 2016 and now is facing a tough re-election in Wisconsin, which I hope he loses, Scott Walker is not a college graduate.
So, interesting stats. And, we don't go a show, Ron, without discussing some interesting trivia yes. about presidents. And today the topic was presidents who were lawyers and presidents who were in the military. Do you agree with me that having some military experience, you don't have to be a general like Eisenhower, but having some experience in the military is important, and for no other reason that the president is the commander-in-chief of the military. And so unless you've been in the military, you're not going to know as much about it as someone who has served. How important is military service to being a president?
Military background, and also probably be a lawyer is preferred over business or anything else. I think that is important, but it's not a requirement. Anybody can run who's born in the United States, is a citizen, and is 35 years of age. And we have a young person in that article, Eric Swalwell, who's a congressman who's thinking of running, and he's got a big name on the House Judiciary Committee and also on the House Intelligence Committee, and he would be 40 at the time of the election if he was to win, making him the youngest president. And he's considered a possible choice, maybe not likely to be the nominee, but he is on the list from California, from the 15th Congressional District.
So having been in the military, being an attorney, especially if you've gone to Columbia or Harvard, like some of the candidates have, Joe Kennedy, for example, the chapstick kid we call him, Harvard graduate. So that certainly is helpful, but it's not a requirement, as there are many things that make a good president. Another person is a potential presidential candidate we've talked about regularly, current Lieutenant Governor Gavin Newsom, expected to become the new governor of California with the election coming up next week. He was the first public official to marry gay couples. That was in 2004 while mayor of San Francisco. You say it's unlikely that Newsom would immediately announce for president after having just won the governorship, but maybe in 2024. He may also seek to replace...
Yes, because Dianne Feinstein,
right.
assuming she wins the seat, which she will, she'll be 91 in 2024. The thought is hopefully she's not going to run at 91 like she does now at 85, but who knows? She might, but if she doesn't, then that Senate seat will be open, and he'll have more of a national image than even being governor. And I think then or later, depending on who's in office, he might want to run for president. And also I mentioned, of course, a billionaire hedge fund manager who's been involved in politics a lot of Tom Steyer, who's led an impeach Trump movement. Of course, he's never been in government directly, just helped people. So I'm a little skeptical about that because I really don't want another person who has not been in government. But he's also from California, so who knows? And then there's some who think even Jerry Brown, who'll be 82, might announce, there's some rumors that he might, that he might decide, why not try? Not that he's going to be the nominee. So actually, there's even a sixth possibility for California who might announce. But obviously, most of them are probably not going to be serious. I think Kamala Harris probably has the best chance.
And last but not least, Michael Avenatti, the attorney and entrepreneur.
Oh, yes. who I don't take seriously, but he is from California. You're right.
Defending porn actress Stormy Daniels, in court against Donald Trump. Interesting topic for the headlines and for the tabloids. So he is a somewhat known figure. Bottom line is the Golden State, with almost 40 million people, you're right, will play a major role in the politics of 2020 and into the future. And of course, here in Ohio, not as many people, not as many electoral votes, but it always seems like as Ohio goes, the rest of the country goes, and we're likely to have dozens and dozens of visits from the presidential candidates like we always seem to have.
I think Ohio, wherever it goes, will decide who the next president is. It always has had that kind of impact most of the time. I would expect that if you lose Ohio, you're done as a candidate.
So bottom line is, folks, get off of your rear ends and vote. No excuse to complain about the people who win if you don't do that. I complain about the people in office, but you know what? I vote, so I have a right to do that. So please.
Yeah, I wanted to mention, of course, that John Kasich will certainly be a candidate, I think, on the Republican side. And Sherrod Brown might be on the Democratic side, or Richard Cordray might be. You know, I think there's a chance to have a couple of Ohioans in the presidential race, not necessarily the nominees, but in the race.
And on that note, the bell has rung. Once again, 43 minutes or so. Flies, but that's okay. Time flies when you're having fun, like my mama always told me. Ron, thank you so much for joining us. Our next show will be an exciting one, the day before the election. And we'll be discussing current events, leaving time for laughter and wisecracks, and as we always do, discussing presidential demographics and presidential history. Today's topic was presidents who were lawyers and presidents who were in the military. Also discussed Georgia election. Of course, we discussed the tragic event recently that took place in Pittsburgh, and discussed presidential candidates from California and other places. Thanks again, Ron, for being with us on a finer mid-morning coffee break with Adam and the Professor. Have a great rest of your Monday.
Thank you so much again, Adam. I really enjoyed it.